second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Friday morning. Hope everybody's having a great start to your day, or it's probably more than just a start. You're having a great day to this point as we get a little bit closer to wrapping up another week here on the show. Darren McFarland, that's me, Willie Donick over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe is actually going to be on the afternoon show today with Floyd Reese, so it'll be Chase and the GM today starting at 2 o'clock. Nick Suss is on the line with us, Clarion Ledger. We always have enjoyed our chats with him. Nick, we have talked a lot of things with you about Ole Miss and Mississippi State over the years, but I don't remember us ever talking about the flag. So this is going to be a new one in all of our conversations.
Yeah, except for me, who has spent the last 72 hours thinking about nothing but fabric.
That's exactly right. It has become the story, and yes, you're right. And you're where you are. I'm curious. Let's just start there. What is the pulse of? Is it a divide? Is it a 50-50? Where are, you know, people in the state of Mississippi right now on this current topic?
So there was a poll put out, I think, by the Mississippi Economic Commission on Wednesday that said about 55% of Mississippians polled were in favor of changing the flag. That's a change of about 10 to 11% from last year, when only about 44-45% of Mississippians were in favor of changing the flag. So we have seen a public perception change. That said, when you're in that 45 to 55 range, you are still very much within the margin of error of what should be considered a very close debate if it is put up to a public vote. Right now, they're trying in legislature to get the sufficient number of votes to get a law passed independent of a citizen vote, trying to just pass it as a law like you would pass any other law. And right now it seems as if there are about 20 to 25 state legislatures who are pretty bent on the idea of not changing the flag. So you have a split of probably the change side needs 5 to 10 more votes to swing. Some people think they have it. Some people think they don't. It gets really complicated. There are a lot of very prominent Republicans in the state government, the Speaker of the House, the Attorney General, the Lieutenant Governor, who have all come out and said they are in favor of a change. But the big issue is legislative session is coming up to an end. It was supposed to end today. I believe they are extending it for this and a few other reasons with coronavirus and pandemic reasons, but still we are coming up toward the end of the legislative session, so there's not very much time to get this passed if they want to get it passed before it would potentially be on a ballot as a resolution in November. And they're also running up against the fact that the governor hasn't said one way or the other. So we have very little to know of. He said he wouldn't veto it if the people voted to change the flag, but he hasn't said anything about whether he would vote veto if the government itself changes to vote the flag.
So you said the numbers have shifted, and quite honestly, I'm pleasantly surprised and glad to hear that it was more than 50%, as you said at the beginning. I figured it would probably be a tick under 50%. You're saying now there's been kind of a push to more like 55%. What do you think has helped kind of that shift? Like you said, the last time you put a poll out, and it was, what, up 10, 12%. I mean, you've got obviously stars out there saying stuff. Faith Hill, I know, has come out and said, you know, that Mississippi needs to change the flag. And now you've got the coaches. You've got Lane Kiffin. You know, you've got Mike Leach. You've got the basketball coaches and Kermit Davis and Ben Allen. You've got Kylan Hill coming out and saying, hey, I might not even play for Mississippi State this year. So in your opinion, because I know it's hard for you to figure out, Nick, exactly what has kind of changed a little bit in your state, and also just what's going on in our country to kind of get this thing going up over 50% and maybe in a direction like South Carolina did, where eventually this is going to happen and they are going to change the state flag. Is it all the above? How would you answer that?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above and more. I think there are a lot of people who saw what the NCAA and the SEC said last week about prohibiting postseason events from being played in the state, and they can sort of see the writing on the wall of, well, what does this mean if the NCAA or the SEC end up kicking us out? Are we vital? Are we necessary? And I think there are some people who might have that fear and start to think, hey, do I love looking at this flag more, or do I love the opportunity to compete in intercollegiate athletics? I think there are some people who have seen what's been going on nationally in the last month since Memorial Day and the George Floyd killing, that a lot of people have just taken more of an interest than we've seen in the last ever in trying to right some of the wrongs that have happened in this country in the past. And I think that I spent a long time on the phone last night with an Ole Miss football player who's actually organizing a march tomorrow to get some Confederate monuments in this town removed. And he said something that I hadn't thought about, which was when the NFL a couple of weeks ago came out and said, we support our players doing what they want to make a change. And when the NFL reversed its position on Kaepernick and pretty much said all was forgiven, that kind of gave a lot of these guys license to feel like, well, if NFL players have the right to do it, so do I. And I think a reason that we've seen so many prominent people, you brought up Faith Hill, but you can go through a list of virtually any sports or entertainment celebrity who has a connection to Mississippi. Many, many, many of them have said something about this flag. And I think it's because we've reached a point in society where the empty platitudes of saying, hey, this flag debate is in my thoughts, I hope that everybody knows I'm thinking about Mississippi, I know there are great people on both sides, I think that platitude is kind of going away, and people have used, I don't know if it's the pandemic, I don't know if it's the marches, I don't know if it's just a sign of the times and progress, but I think people are starting to use their voice more as the weapon that it is. People who have power have leverage, and it's been truly exciting and humbling to see the people with this leverage try and leverage that power for positive change.
Well, the Confederate flag being removed from the grounds of any track of a NASCAR event, you know, that is a subject that's been tossed around for a long time, and we probably never thought we would see that, and we know that has happened. So there is real movement. Like I said, South Carolina fought this too early on, and then they changed. And as you mentioned, the SEC and the NCAA, the same thing happened, I remember, with South Carolina. Like, we're not coming to your state to do anything. And to, in fact, was it the, I think the All-Star game was supposed to, or maybe that was North Carolina, but they're just all these events saying, we're not coming there until you change your state flag, and they did. What has been the reaction, Nick, of the coaches coming out and showing solidarity in saying, hey, there needs to be a change to the state flag?
I mean, with any situation like that, you're going to have your fanatic fringe, and I'll get my couple of emails or couple of phone calls from people who think the coaches need to stick to coaching and that they're out-of-state people who don't understand Mississippi, and you're going to get stuff like that on any debate, because this is a debate that, even if people who aren't from Mississippi or aren't from the South don't understand it, there are people who are really, really passionate about this debate. It might seem kind of foreign to people who aren't familiar with it, but for the most part, I think that a majority of Ole Miss fans and Mississippi State fans and Southern Miss fans are the rational type that know, even if they don't agree with the coaches on the principle of changing the flag, that the coaches' business practice is very much in jeopardy. Because it's not just, oh man, what if the SEC football championship isn't played in Jackson? That's never going to happen. What really is going to happen is coaches from Louisiana or Texas or Alabama are going to say, hey, recruit for Mississippi. Do you really want to play under that flag? Do you want to come play for me? There are going to be players who consider transferring because they don't want to represent that flag. There are going to be baseball teams and softball teams and women's basketball teams that in the past have thrived because of home field advantage in the postseason, who are going to have a harder trip to the Final Four or to Omaha or to Oklahoma City because they don't have those home games. From the business model of sports, I'm not even talking about the $2, $3 million you'll make off of hosting a baseball regional weekend, but when you factor all that in, I think the fans recognize that the coaches here are just trying to protect the ability of these programs to compete.
That's a great point. Nick Suss is with us, Ole Miss beat writer for the Clarion Ledger. And taking that back, Nick, I mentioned this yesterday, but I don't remember all of the details, but I think that was some of the same mentality of Tommy Tuberville about 20-plus years ago when he took over at Ole Miss, and he tried to weed out the Confederate flag being brought to the stadium. I can remember going down with Vanderbilt to a game down there where that was a hot-button issue at the time, but I think Tommy Tuberville's message in a nutshell was, hey, if you want to win, you know, this is going to improve our chances of winning because of all the things that you just said from a competitive standpoint, the recruiting aspect, some players personally just not wanting to play under that flag, as you mentioned, and why put yourself at a disadvantage?
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of the people who think sports first are thinking, but obviously there are a lot of people in this state who are deeply proud of their heritage, and I don't want to pass judgment on those people. I understand the rationale of people who support that flag and think that it is not a symbol of hatred, but I think that you look at a really telling quote yesterday at the Capitol when, I don't know if we've mentioned this explicitly, but 54 coaches and administrators from 8 Mississippi public colleges went to the state capitol to lobby for a flag change yesterday, and one of the coaches who spoke in front of the Grand Hall was Nikki McCrae Penson, who a lot of your Tennessee listeners might remember from when she played for Pat Summitt on the Lady Vols. And she said she's grown up in the South. She grew up in Tennessee. She went to college in Knoxville, and she had to pretend for most of her childhood that she would see the flag and it wasn't about hate. She'd have to rationalize it in her head and say, this isn't about violence. This isn't about oppression. This isn't about racism. And when you have to play those mental gymnastics, when you have to justify why something isn't racist, you kind of run into an Occam's razor situation, and that makes things really difficult. And I think if you listen to people like Nikki and listen to people like the athletes who have come out and said, this is why I do not support this flag, that's when you start to see this isn't just about somebody wanting to change things for the sake of change. This is about unifying the state, uniting the state. Another person with Tennessee ties, Kermit Davis, who a lot of you will remember from his time at Middle. He grew up in Mississippi. His parents still live in Mississippi. He's got connections all over the state. He came out and said, this isn't about trying to take things away from people. It's about trying to bring everybody together. And I think that's the message that everybody wants to make, which is this isn't about spiting people who like the flag. It's about including everybody, because it's not like the new flag is going to say anyone from Mississippi stinks. Like, it's going to be a flag that includes everybody, and that ultimately would be better in the perspective of these coaches who are lobbying for change.
Nick, it's a really fascinating thing. We've had Coach Davis on so many times over the years when he was at Middle Tennessee, and you know he's a great speaker, right? We enjoy having conversations with him, but it really illustrates, you know, how coaches now, like when you sign up to coach, you probably at the time you became a coach were not fully aware that this could be where you would be going. Right, getting involved in a very important and a very divided kind of topic, a big debate. But here they are. So I commend all of them for having the courage to go up there and speak eloquently and speak from the heart about what this means.
Yeah, it's been pretty impressive. And I mean, just from Kermit's perspective, he caught a little bit of flack and he got a lot of support from it too. But when he first got hired at Ole Miss, in his introductory press conference, he said something about how he will have his players stand for the national anthem. He didn't have to say that, but he said that. And then less than a year into his first season, 9 of his players chose to kneel during the national anthem because there was a march on Ole Miss's campus that day supporting the Confederate flag and the Confederate monuments and iconography in this town. Kermit came out and wholeheartedly supported his players for doing that. when it comes down to, are these coaches going to put their personal politics first, or are they going to put their teams and their players and the people that they've not just recruited but tried to raise into young adults, are they going to put them first? Yes, every time. And that's what we saw yesterday from not just Kermit, not just Nicky McRae, but from Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach and the athletic directors at both of those schools and the athletic directors and coaches from Southern Miss and Alcorn State, and Mississippi Valley State and Jackson State and Delta State and Mississippi University for Women. All of these schools rallied together in support of the student bodies and of their student athletes.
So, Nick, what is the next step in the process here?
Well, somebody's got to vote eventually, whether it is the government or the people. There will have to be a vote about this flag. And Tate Reeves, the governor of the state, has come out and said that he will not veto a flag change if it is voted on by the citizens of Mississippi. But he's also said he doesn't support a government vote. He thinks that this should be left up to the people of Mississippi, which make it very interesting. Would he veto a change or a non-change from legislature just to let the people decide, or will he stick with what legislature does? That's hard to know. But it's going to be really interesting, because if they don't make a decision, if they just continue to fight and fight and fight about it, you're only going to see more businesses and more actions like what happened with the NCAA and SEC start to consider pulling out of Mississippi. Because at this point, there's a reason only one state uses the Confederate battle flag emblem on its state flag. Everybody else has made this change. It's going to be interesting to see how long Mississippi remains the holdout and how long it still has, I don't want to say widespread support, because at the top we talked about it's about 55-45 right now, but that's still pretty significant support in this state.
So let's end on this, Nick. What do you think if what you just laid out, what if it just keeps going back and forth and there's really nothing done in the foreseeable future? What do you think the fallout is? What do you think? I mean, a guy like Kylan Hill, does he really sit out? Are there other star players for any of these schools that we've talked about that say, I'm out, I'm not going to play? What do you think the fallout would be? Do you think something like that could happen?
So, I do, but it's so hard to say. It's so hard to make those guesses. I think what I'll say is, if this gets stuck in limbo, this has more of an effect on the future than it does on the present or the immediate future.
Okay.
I bring up the example of Ole Miss has a football game, home-and-home series, scheduled against Southern California in 2027 and 2028, maybe 2026, 2027. Do you think USC is going to pull out of that? Do you think the school from Los Angeles is going to consider saying, hey, we're not going to go to Mississippi if they have that flag? That's a possibility. That's just as realistic as players deciding they're not going to play under the flag. Do you think the top recruits who were considering taking official visits to Ole Miss or Mississippi State might say, hey, let's go to Texas or Alabama or Louisiana to look at some schools instead of going to Mississippi? That's possible too. I think that the effects of this are really, really far reaching from an athletics perspective. And I mean, the sports that end up being hit the hardest probably end up being the Mississippi State women's basketball program, which would lose the ability to host in the first two rounds of the tournament, which they've done, I think, the last four tournaments, and they've been a perennial top 10 team. And then now you have no chance to play the NCAA tournament games at home. And what happens there? Do kids want to keep playing for you? And then Ole Miss and Mississippi State's baseball programs are perennial top 25 teams. They both hosted regionals. I think each of the last 2 years they've both hosted regionals. Mississippi State hosted Supers, I think, both of those years. You start to look at, man, these programs that the schools are actually thriving with, what happens to them? So you look at Kylan Hill. I think he's good on his word. I don't think he's going to say, well, I was kidding. But I think that the effects are a little further reaching than just the idea of, hey, one or two kids might sit out.
I think you laid it out perfectly. Appreciate the visit, as always. Good stuff. Continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road, okay?
Thanks, y'all. Be safe.
Nick Suss, Clarion Ledger. He does fantastic work, and we always enjoy our chats with him. He is a wealth of knowledge and information every time he comes on the show. Pete Weber, just around the corner. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We got some Papa John's gift cards to give away for trivia. And actually some Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House gift cards too. Ten Roof gift card for You Just Made the List. So those are things on tap. That's coming up. You Just Made the List at noon. And Friday Trivia will be in the final hour. Don't forget rocknashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's Good to Go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to donate to Second Harvest Food Bank of Middle Tennessee, which helps support their mission of feeding hungry people, as well as other ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. Nick Suss, good as always. It's an interesting topic. I'll be very curious to see, Willie, where this goes, because I think we've seen a lot of things happen that have been discussed and have been topics for a long time that have actually had things happen, right? Like real movement, things that we didn't think would actually change, they did. And I just kind of feel like Mississippi is not going to be able to overcome this, nor should they. I mean, it should be changed, and I think it's time, and it's finally going to happen, in my opinion.
Well, I think Nick laid it out really, really well, all of the layers to it, right? The first layer is it's the only flag left of the 50 states that has the Confederate symbol on it, right? So there are a lot of other southern states that have adjusted the state flag.
Correct.
And they're the last one left. Then there is the practical part that he said with the NCAA exercising its muscle. And hey, we get on the NCAA a lot for things that we don't like what they do sometimes, but I think this is a great way to be a catalyst for change, for positive change. And that is, hey, you can keep the flag, but I think about it in terms of baseball, right? I played college baseball. I played at both of those atmospheres, and they are fantastic home field advantages, Swayze Field and Duty Noble Field, right? Two of the best college atmospheres that you'll find in college baseball. And if I'm a coach of those teams and I can't host a regional or a super regional because of the flag, that's got direct ramifications on your ability to win and get to Omaha. How many times have we talked about in the context of when we cover the NCAA regionals, how important it is to host the games?
Yep.
Right? It's a huge thing. So that is big. And think about, as we talked about with Peter Burns the other day, the Mississippi State women's basketball program is an elite program.
Yep.
And you can host regionals there. It's different than the men's, right? And why would you put your team at a disadvantage over that? And I realize that this runs deep, this is long, but it's just time to have more of a progressive thought, I think, to it. And I do wonder, I'd like to see, let the people decide, right? If that's how you want to do it, then I think this will be a great exercise in your right to vote if the people of Mississippi are given that chance. They'll decide.
Well, listening
and
to it, what
and if they
Nick
decide
said,
to keep the flag, they can, but they will be putting these teams at a disadvantage.
Yeah. Well, as he said, doesn't seem like the governor is going to stand up there and say anything one way or the other than he just said, I won't veto it. So basically he's
yeah,
just
I saw what he wrote. He had a very down the middle, not really yeah. taking a position, kind of lamenting that it's divided. You know, I think, you know, read between the lines, he wishes it wouldn't be such a divisive thing, but it is, right? So I wonder what kind of sway he would have if he took a position and what that would do to a vote. But I think somebody proposed have two flags, and he basically was saying in that thing that I saw written up, he said, that's not going to fly. That's not going to work. We have to decide this.
I thought an interesting angle that he brought up is, you know, what would be the fallout? Obviously, We know the fallout for the foreseeable future could be star players saying, I'm not playing, I'm out. So that could affect them right now. Down the road, recruiting. There's no doubt it could affect them 100% recruiting. There could be big-time recruits that say, I'm not going there. I'm not going to go there because of the state flag. And then the other one that I hadn't really thought of is, does this now put the schools like Ole Miss and Mississippi State with some serious scheduling challenges down the road of trying to get, you know, opponents to come play there, especially in football, big-time opponents, right? Trying to get a named team to come to, you know, Oxford or what have you, Starkville. And they may just say, you know, you may be able to get the lesser teams because they're looking for a paycheck, and they may just say, hey, we have to do it. We need this money. But bigger schools, because sometimes, you know, they do that. Sometimes they get an out-of-conference game where it's got real appeal, and it's like, oh, okay, all right. But you may have those – you may have the big schools say, it's just not good for business. It's not good for us. We're against it, and we're not coming. I didn't really thought about that because he said USC is on the – we're talking way down the road. I think he said, what, 2027? Something like that. But he said, you know, USC could be like, yeah, we're not coming there. It's not happening. I hadn't really thought about
that. I'll be totally honest, Aaron. I've been a little surprised. I'll give you another perspective that I've had. When I was in school at Vanderbilt, there was a classmate of mine who I took a number of classes with him, Carlos Thomas. He was a running back for Vanderbilt. And he was very outspoken about the Confederate flag for Ole Miss. And, you know, he basically just went on the record and said, I crossed Ole Miss off the list. You know, I wasn't interested in being recruited by Ole Miss because of the flag. And so I've always wondered why it hasn't really I've wondered why they've been as competitive as they have, you know, particularly in football and basketball. Is it, you know, or really any sport in terms of African-American athletes going down there? I am a little surprised it hasn't hurt them more to this point here in 2020. I mean, so this observation was made by Carlos Thomas in 1990. That's maybe when I first started really thinking about it. So that's been 30 years. I'm getting old. But, you know, they've done a reasonable amount of winning, both Ole Miss and Mississippi State, just to be talking about the two SEC schools. You know, Southern Miss is down there. There's other schools. But I'm surprised it's taken this long, honestly.
Well, we don't know how it's affected them. I mean, we don't know of recruits that could have changed their fortunes that said no because of that. I'm not familiar enough with the recruiting scene and the ins and outs on this topic to know that, you know, 12 years ago they may have had two recruits that could have changed, you know, that went on to go to, I don't know, Alabama and LSU or whatever, Auburn, and they completely changed. You know, they end up being huge, impactful players to that roster, and maybe it would have changed their season. Or seasons around if they had gone to Ole Miss or Mississippi State. I don't know that. I mean, just saying, I would find that hard to believe that we wouldn't have examples of that, right? That guys that would have been really impactful on one of those rosters and that said, you know what, I'm just not going there. And maybe they didn't even make it public. Maybe it was more of a private deal, like I'm just not going there because I don't want to go there because of their flag, their state flag. It's offensive to me or what have you. It might not even have been a public thing, but you can't tell me over the years, if you're telling a story of 30 years ago, you can't tell me that they haven't been impacted and maybe they didn't even realize it, right? Maybe they didn't, the recruit didn't tell them why they didn't choose them. Usually, I guess that doesn't happen, right? Typically they don't, that's not how it works in the world, right? It's like when you don't get the job, they're not owed to tell you, this is why we didn't choose you. It's just we went in a different direction, and that's kind of how recruiting works. But if they did, you don't know. They may have been told that on many times, and that could have changed things. Maybe that would have had coaches pushing for this a lot more, you know, a long time ago, if they knew that kids were literally going somewhere else because of that, and they just didn't tell them, or they just didn't know.
Right. And remember, we're talking about two levels, the Confederate flag being around, right, which was something that Tommy Tuberville successfully tackled. They had some sort of compromise where they had another flag that he offered as an alternative that worked. I mean, obviously Ole Miss's colors are the same colors as the Confederate flag, so it wasn't hard to make an alteration, but he got a victory in that he got the Confederate flag out of there. The state flag is the next level, right? So I just think that this is the time. I mean, there's an opportunity here to push to make the change. I hope the people get a chance to decide. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
For me, I'd like to see. Of course, you know, we're not a part of that. We're in a different state, but I'd like to see what happens.
We will come back and bring in the voice of the Predators, Pete Weber, longtime voice, the legend, the Hall of Famer. We will come back and close up hour number two with Pete Weber on the other side. Darren Donica Chase, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. A little School of Rock. That's what I always think of when I hear this. Back here on Darren Donica Chase on this Friday. Marquise Munson back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. The voice of the Preds, Pete Weber, is on the line with us. Pete, how you doing?
I'm doing very well this morning, and I understood you wanted some Buster Bison stories.
Happy Buster Day to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
How is Buster doing?
He seems to be doing okay and might be doing even better if, as some reports have it, the Toronto Blue Jays, Buster's parent team, if you will, they end up playing games at the ballpark in Buffalo rather than Toronto when baseball returns to action in a few weeks.
Oh, Willie, I think I said Buffalo yesterday as an alternative home for Toronto.
Yeah, you did. So I'm very intrigued. I'm intrigued, and I'm sure the people of Buffalo are.
Well, by the way, that could be a name here. We were looking for that second team to play at First Horizon Park. Maybe they could be the Bison, and Buster could come here and be the mascot if, indeed, Toronto doesn't go to Buffalo. We could do that.
Buster and Booster. That could be a great show.
Oh, we're on to something now. We are on to something. I saw something this morning about Chris Thorburn, who, of course, has hung up his skates. And it was actually him, when he was with Winnipeg, fighting Barrett Jackman the year he was here with the Preds. What do you remember about Chris Thorburn?
Let's just say pugnacious is the thing I remember about him the most. That was that marked his career, I think we can say, but a very honest player. He was the sort of guy that they always talk about shift disturbers, and I think he was very capable of that sort of play, 100%.
That's one way of describing him, yes. I think that fits him well. We've eliminated, or not we, the league has eliminated Vancouver, so you can cross them off the list. What's your gut on where this is going on these two hub cities?
Well, you know, and I'm wondering – all of us have been thinking for the longest time that Vegas was going to be a sure thing. And I'm wondering about that now. I'm wondering, as a matter of fact, if they might not choose two Canadian cities, and there are two left under consideration, Edmonton and Toronto, if they might not be there because of the coronavirus incidences are so much lower in those two cities. And I know that if there are some players listening here, they probably just groaned thinking that Vegas is not under consideration. But, hey, guys, we have never heard anything official about Las Vegas, now have we? And so, you know, safety has to be of the utmost concern. And Dr. Bonnie Henry is the chief medical officer of the province of British Columbia. And she said they just couldn't agree on contingency plans if a player would have tested positive for COVID-19 during a tournament in Vancouver.
Hmm. Interesting. So, yeah, that is a good point. I mean, we've kind of just assumed that Vegas was always going to be one for sure, but So are you saying that because of just the spike lately?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. And I'm fearful for the NBA and MLS, too,
right,
in Orlando, which the other day reported a 650% increase in cases.
Yeah, that is true. By the way, our state has not fared well either.
No, it has not.
We are one of the top cities in the country with spike numbers. So, what do you think? We've had a lot of time to digest this and just kind of process what this is going to be like, because you've been at this for a long time, and we're about to see something we've never seen before, right? We have never seen anything like this, where a season halted almost at its conclusion, took 4 months off, and is going to pick back up in the playoffs.
And or at least plans to.
Well,
I think
at least
we better put it that way.
Yeah, or at least that's the plan to, as of today. If it plays out that way, we're all trying to figure out, what is it going to look like? What's your gut feeling on what we're going to see? Because it's going to be a first if we do indeed see it.
The most unpredictable of outcomes, I think, are almost have to be predictable here because of the long break. And I know they're going to have 3 or 4 weeks of training camp that starts July 10th. But because of this big, as we've always referred to it, the pause button was hit, then you have to regenerate things all over again. It's not going to make any difference how hot Philadelphia was coming down the stretch. None of those things, because you have to pick back up. You know, and our old argument always about how, is there such a thing as momentum in hockey? Well, I don't think you can pause at the top of a hill, or for that matter, at the bottom of a hill, and think you're going to be able to either roll down easily or come up easily. It's going to start all over again. But I will give you one prediction right now. I'm going to predict the Columbus Blue Jackets over the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first series.
Oh, boy. Wouldn't that get it going?
Ooh. Well,
can you imagine if that happened in Toronto?
I'm sorry?
What if that happened in Toronto? What an amazing start to the resumption of the season that would be.
Yeah, though if they pick two Canadian cities, or just even Toronto and Vegas, I'm not so sure that the general manager's push to flip-flop, to have the Eastern 12 go to the West and the Western 12 go to the East, so there is no sign of an advantage for anybody. Though in this scenario, I can't conceive of home ice advantage.
Pete Weber is with us, voice of the Predators. And Pete, the Hall of Fame made their selections this week. And it's interesting. There are a couple of guys. I think of Marian Hossa and I think of Jerome Iginla. Their careers basically got started as the Predators got started, as a franchise. So we sort of saw their entire arc of their career. And both of them obviously had huge moments against Nashville. But it was great to kind of think about that as they got the induction.
Two high-class individuals. I'm never going to forget the two Thomas Vokoun, Jerome Iginla battles, one here, one in Calgary. And then with Marian Hossa, and it's unfortunate my memory is going to be this, but it would be the same thing if Don Denkinger were put in the Baseball Hall of Fame for me, to think that it was Marian Hossa who would, as it turned out in 2010, go to his third straight Stanley Cup final, with his third different team, but he got the winning goal in Game 5 against Nashville at the United Center after, I think, there's a very good case that could have been made where he should have been ejected for his hit on Dan Hamhuis.
No question. That is still the most gut-wrenching loss, I think, in Predators history. And it's got some competition now because there's more history to the team now, but certainly at the time it was. But so were you surprised that Hossa got in? I mean, he is obviously a great player, but he's well-traveled. He wasn't always maybe the guy. I mean, if you take the three cup teams he played with Chicago, he wouldn't be the first guy that you would list among the great players there. But is he still a Hall of Famer in your mind?
He's still a Hall of Famer. And a lot of that has to do, I think, with the great coaching he had in junior, Brent Peterson.
Yes, Mr. Brent Peterson.
No, I think he's a Hall of Famer, absolutely. I was more than a little bit disturbed, though, that I didn't see Alexander McGillney get elected yesterday. And there's no transparency in these proceedings. You have to get 14 votes for the 18 Hall of Fame selectors. And we don't know if he got 13, if he got 6, if he got none. But I still think that he is a Hall of Fame player. I mean, the two guys that came over to the league after he arrived, that were his line mates on the junior team out of the Soviet Union, Sergei Fedorov and Pavel Bure, are already in the Hall of Fame. And I really think that he was as spectacular as they were.
You know, Pete, we got into this discussion a little bit yesterday with Elliot Friedman, that it, there's two things that always are at play when you're trying to elect Hall of Famers. Number one, how low do you want to set the bar, or how high do you want to set the bar? And the other part is, especially with in terms of football and hockey, with a defenseman like Kevin Lowe, like for one thing, you know, you have McGillney, you can lay out the goals, and he was a goal scorer, and then you can decide whether that's Hall of Fame worthy. That's a little easier. But a guy like Kevin Lowe, who was more of a defenseman, and there were less, there weren't the analytics back then. He certainly won a lot. But that's got to be a tough thing sometimes for Hall of Fame voters to try to quantify, particularly a defenseman, how great they were.
Particularly a guy like Kevin, who was really a defensive defenseman. That is very difficult to evaluate. I have no problem with him making the Hall of Fame. As a matter of fact, I was rather surprised to see how long it has taken someone for him who built a very impressive resume, 6 Stanley Cups, 5 at Edmonton, 1 with the New York Rangers, and the only one the Rangers have won now in the last 80 years, and he played a large role with them, along with Sergei Zubov. And some guy named Leach, he's pretty good too. But I'm just thinking that that is a very hard position to evaluate, much like the difficulties, and Willie, this, let's bring it to the present day. How difficult is it to truly evaluate defensemen for the Norris Trophy?
Yeah, at least there's more tools now than there were. But, yeah, I've always thought that, as you said, the defensive defenseman or the appreciation for how well a guy defends is always much more subjective, almost like it is in baseball, too. I mean, you can look at range. Your eyeballs can tell you how good of a defensive player it is, but there's not a lot of stats that go with it sometimes.
Correct. Correct. The evaluation.
So what about the front office guys? What about the front office guys that got in? Ken Holland and Doug Wilson.
Well, Doug got in as a player. So that's a little bit different there. He's in the management right now. Ken Holland, I think Predators fans might be happy to know that the first real pair of pro-level goalie pads that was used by a young guy in the Binghamton, New York area named Mike Dunham, were contributed to him by Ken Holland, who was golfing at Mike Dunham's father's golf course there in Endicott, New York. So that was a little bit of a touch there to the Nashville Predators and their future. But Ken Holland, he might be the most famous Electrolux salesman of all time. His mother sort of got him a job with Electrolux, and then 2 days later he got a call from Jimmy Devolano in Detroit, wondering if he'd be interested in becoming an area scout for the Red Wings. And then he took off from there.
Pete, I'm not sure off the top of my head who becomes eligible next year, but is McGillney in your mind the best player? Is McGillney in your mind the best player that's not in at this point? Or are there others that you've always felt like should be in that continue to get overlooked?
In my mind, and it's going to sound like my Western New York bias, but and I know Buster would be with me here on this, but Alex McGillney and Pierre Turgeon. Turgeon, higher point total than anybody who is not in the Hall of Fame right now. And McGillney, boy, he's been eligible since 2009. Yeah, you can always look at those, but then recent times we also had Dave Andrejczyk, who was, Mr. Power Play Goal Specialist and hung in there long enough to be on the Cup team with the Tampa Bay Lightning in 2004. So he's going, he finally got his way in there. It's unfortunate you have to wait so long, but I think the most unfortunate thing is, I love I love the Hockey Hall of Fame. There is no question. I go there whenever I get the chance. But the transparency, I think, needs to be improved greatly.
Why do you think we keep talking about McGillney, and why does he keep getting overlooked, in your opinion?
I wish I could come up with a good reason for that, Darren. I have no idea. And here was a guy, you want to talk about somebody risking his life and the safety of his family, coming over as he did, a defector from the Soviet Red Army. I mean, they ordered, they told any Soviet national living wherever in the world, if they were to see Alex McGillney after he defected in 1989, to shoot him on sight. And then there was a Soviet national that somehow or another found his way into the Sabres dressing room at the Odd and was trying to extort $250,000 from him to keep his family safe back home in the Soviet Union. He went through an awful lot. And two of my longtime hockey friends, Don Luce and Jerry Meehan, went through a lot to spirit him away from Europe during the World Championships.
Wow. Willie, did you have anything else?
Well, I was just, Pete, I think you were about to say who comes eligible next year. I think people would be curious as to, because that's always a factor, who goes on the ballot.
Yep, that's right. And next year, there's a couple of twins that Brian Burke went through multiple trades to make sure he could draft them back-to-back. The Sedin twins, they will come up for election next year. And I've discussed with some friends over the last few days, wouldn't it be something if they decided to put Henrik in separate from Daniel?
Or they may not get in at all. I've had that conversation in the past, and it's pretty interesting. There's some pretty strong feelings one way or the other how people feel about them getting in.
They revolutionized the way the game was played out there, and their impact on hockey in Vancouver, who knows, maybe you could even say trickle-down effect will help with launching the new franchise in Seattle.
Have you been able to see what your seat will look like at Climate Pledge Arena? If you're going to be high up, not high up, do you know?
I have not seen a virtual tour yet that will show me that, but anything will be better than Edmonton.
It cannot be further out than Edmonton. I'm pretty convinced of that.
I'm convinced of that as well. And I loved when Joe Bowen, my buddy with the Maple Leafs, took a picture 2 years ago and put it on Twitter saying, can you believe this is a building in Canada? That's my view. Come on.
Pete, always good stuff. You and Claudia continue to be safe, and have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. You guys, too. Let's keep it going, and it's only hope. That's what we're trying to sell, but hope that sports can be back at some point soon. And the other addendum to that is, and safely so.
Yep, amen to that. Pete Weber, Hall of Fame voice, Nashville Predators. Always good to chat with him. That'll do it for hour number two. When we come back, you just made the list to start things off. That's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.